Just going to run this dog to see if we can find any type of human remains that are left.
Listen to Where Secrets Go to Die, The Disappearance of Derek Hennigan. From the Detroit Free Press, a new podcast set in the woods of Michigan's Upper Peninsula. Available on Apple, Spotify, Freep.com, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello and welcome to the Soccer Speakeasy. Today is Thursday, the 12th of May, 2022. It's just after 10:30 in the morning as we record, 2 days prior to game day. Saturday, the crew plays at New York City FC, finishing up a tour of trophy winners from last season. I'm Mike Arace. Thanks for joining us. With me, per usual, at the Speakeasy is our fine crew beat writer. What's your name again?
Underscore JC Myers.
that would be it. And of course, Kyle Robertson. Jacob Myers, of course, being our fine crew beat writer. We kid. You know, it's out of affection. Let's get right to it, gentlemen. The crew is climbed a little bit up to ninth place in the standings. Just to set it up, The season's beginning to take form now that they're 10 games into a 34-game season. The Columbus entry is 3-3-4, 15 goals for, 11 against, plus 4. That's pretty good in the big picture of things, as much as we've cracked on their offense.
Yeah.
They're in ninth place with a plus differential, and not a bad plus differential. You know, Philadelphia is plus 7, and they're at the top of the Eastern table. Of course, it looks like the real powers are out west. LAFC and Austin, 23 points and 20 respectively. They're 1-2 in the league in wins. They're tied for the league leading differential, plus 13. And they're 1-2 in goals for. Austin, I imagine Ooh. That against the backdrop of a surging Austin team that this makes crew fans a little bit antsy. Coming off the last game here, well, let's do the last two since it's been 2 weeks since yep. we sat down here. Prior to the last two games, the crew was on a four-game losing streak if you throw in the USL game or the U.S. Open Cup game at Detroit, a 2-1 loss. Prior to that, they'd lost by shutout, three consecutive games, home against Nashville, at Philadelphia, and home against Orlando. They come back from that game in Detroit, the embarrassing loss in Detroit, and they tie Kansas City on the road, and then on the next Saturday, last Saturday, they tie Kansas City on the road, and then home against D.C., they look to get back on the beam, and a 3-0 win takes a lot of pressure off the coach and the players too. Everyone wondering where offense would come from. They scored three goals. They won by shutout, and then they bounced back a week later and a tie on the road against the defending Supporters Shield titleist, the New England Revolution. Not a bad couple weeks, Jacobs. Why don't you just take us through that any avenue you wish?
Yeah, I mean, we'll start with setting up when we were setting up the DC United game. I think it was pretty obvious that if that wasn't going to be like the definitive barometer as if Caleb Porter kept his job or not, certainly another loss at home during that stretch would have added some fuel to the fire or at least kept the conversation alive,
especially with the games that were upcoming, you know.
Yes, that's a great right. point too. It felt like one they absolutely needed, and you know, it started with the Sporting Kansas City match, mostly because Lucas hadn't been starting in the lineup, but they have definitely found something with this 4-3-3 lineup with James Igbekeme and Aiden Morris in there to kind of shore up that midfield and just gives a little more bite to this lineup. But they played with a little less of the ball. It starts with, you know, I think they were a little lucky in this game right. too. That term is so overused in soccer, I get it, but they really hadn't been getting those kind of bounces. Ola Kamara puts one off the post, comes right back to Aloy Room, right. and then Pedro
Ooh.
How many of those shots? Yeah, it's a great shot on this on the free kick. Yeah. But how many of those, you know, hit off the last guy yeah. on the wall and go out of play for a corner?
Just going to run this dog to see if we can find any type of human remains that are left.
Listen to Where Secrets Go to Die, The Disappearance of Derek Hennigan. From the Detroit Free Press, a new podcast set in the woods of Michigan's Upper Peninsula. Available on Apple, Spotify, Freep.com, or wherever you get your podcasts.
That was also the backup keeper in there, yeah. and he was behind the wall for
well, he didn't know whatever. What he was doing.
I mean, again, we've talked a little goalkeeping 101 during the season, Kyle, and they set up the wall to cover the left post, and he stayed inside the wall, and Pedro looked up and said, okay, bam. It's like you could have driven a semi through there. But please continue, Jacob.
Yeah, well, to go on from there, just a couple broad takeaways from these last few games. Pedro Santos, I think you could say he's playing like one of the best left backs in the league right now. I mean, he's looked really great on both sides. He sets up both of the goals at New England. Derek Etienne scored against DC on a great pass from Josh Williams over the top. And then Derek has two assists as a fill-in at right back against New England.
Tied for third in the league in assists.
Is he?
Yeah.
I mean, he's playing well, and that was a player that Caleb Porter publicly challenged. Same with Miguel Berry, got a goal, a good run, and Eric Hurtado showed up as well. One of the most unlikely sources to get a late goal, but it was good to see. And the broadcast was talking about him looking better in training lately, so I guess something to watch out for. But they have been playing much better, and they seem to have a bit more spirit now, too.
Well, what I liked most about the New England game was the way that they scored those two goals. That was vintage, you know, when you had Zardes, you know, going from the back post, going to the front, making that run and getting the ball there on time and just putting it on a goal.
And it's funny you say that, and I probably won't include this in a story I'm doing for We're Talking Thursday for Friday about Miguel Berry and this kind of two-month stretch of being interesting for him before they get a new striker in here. He had talked about he saw that play coming on his first goal at New England, and he likened it to a play when Jossie scored against San Jose earlier this year. He just said it seemed to be everyone was in perfect rhythm, and he kind of equated the stretches where they weren't kind of very fluid offensively and scoring goals as just them being off by a hair here or there. So it's something interesting to watch. It seems like they had some chemistry there.
What do you think of this formation, Kyle? It's obviously, is it better suited for them, or is it something they needed to do because they were having such a lack of success before?
I think it was something you had to do because nothing else was working.
And it's worked out. Yeah. It's taken a little pressure off.
But it's also, I mean, it's Morse in the middle. It's James on the outside. You know, Derek is in form. And, you know, I think when he's playing like he is, he's one of the best. But it's a consistency thing.
I think you got to the point where they showed they can keep a lot of the ball and create chances that way, but they couldn't score. So, okay, how many games are they just going to continue here, keeping a lot of the ball, maybe creating chances, but not scoring and taking a loss until flipping it a little bit, giving the other team the ball and just getting your best players on the field and putting a formation together that fits that.
Right.
It'll be interesting now as Lucas El Rayon is likely to start on Saturday at New York City. That's what Caleb Porter said after Lucas has had some knee inflammation from an injury he suffered against Red Bulls back in March. Who comes off? Aiden Morris, James Igbekeme, Miguel Berry, or Derek Etienne? One of those guys is going to have to come off the bench. I would think it's going to be one of those wingers, but it seemed to be, or maybe Aiden comes off and you put James back in the midfield because you can bring on Aiden if you need another guy to kind of disrupt the midfield. It'll be interesting.
Right. But that's what the crew needs. They need to be able to have that 1-2 punch of Lucas being able to hit those free kicks, those goal, you know, the long range shots, but then also get the balls in, you know, into Berry from the wing. And when you have that 1-2 kind of punch and things are going, I think that's what crew fans want to see and kind of have seen. You know, when they made that run, you know, did that cup just a couple years ago, that's what it was. It was a, you couldn't defend for, if you defend for one, then you got the other. And so kind of vice versa.
It just seems to make more sense to get a guy like Nagby with such great pace in the midfield and Lucas with an open kind of field to play with and two guys coming down the wings or something and a counterattack. That seems to be their offense could be best positioned that way.
Well, it's as we sometimes say in the business, we tend to report on the scoreboard and the standings, and you know, they went four league games without scoring a goal in the last, and they were 0-3-1 in those four games, and then you know the last two they have five goals and 4 points, so you know that says a lot right there, and they're in danger of falling pretty deep in the standings if not for this rebound.
Jacob also said a little bit of luck. I mean, New England had those two shots there at the end that kind of barely missed.
Those are shots for sure. You'd probably tip your cap because they're just rockets from long range. And you had a goalkeeper just kind of standing there.
Oh, I hate that.
At least on the Carlos Heel one, I mean, that's like a Tim Wakefield knuckleball at its best coming at you. I don't know what you can do in that one. But going back to your point about the stretch, Mike, I looked at it coming in after D.C., three road games against New England, New York City, and Atlanta. And then your home game is against LAFC, who's other than Philadelphia Union, I think those two tied this past weekend. With some reason, the league scheduled for 11 p.m. when you have the best two teams in your league playing. But that's another conversation. LAFC is playing some of its best soccer. I think you look at this stretch and say 4 points is okay. Five is pretty good. Right. And six would be excellent in these four games. So if they can just kind of weather this stretch here, and it's clear, too, they are playing better on the road. They don't have a win yet, but it just seems to be they're in these games a lot more than they had been in the past.
So what is that? 3 wins in 2.5 years for Porter on the road?
20. Well, yeah, nine. Discounting the MLS's back tournament when that was a neutral site.
Yeah.
Correct.
So, yeah, the previous two road games at Kansas City and at New England being the most recent, couple draws, 0-0 and 2-2. Things looking up a little. And as Jacob said, we should make the point again. I mean, they were looking at, you know, a 4-game losing streak.
Well, they could have been buried in this stretch.
You know, prior to the Kansas City game, you know, last month, and with DC at home, New England on the road, and then, as you said, at New York City FC, the defending cup champions, and then home against LAFC, that'd be next Saturday, and they're only 7-1-2 with 23-4 and 10 against.
And majority of these games early on are coming on the road.
Yeah. Right. And then at Atlanta, where, you know, the birthplace of soccer. So, and always a tough place to play.
Atlanta, where you blow your Achilles, right?
I've never blown my Achilles in Atlanta.
Well, on that turf. Yeah.
Thanks for asking.
Well, what about the Miles Robinson thing?
Yeah. Bad news.
Yeah.
Bad news bears.
Jacob, why don't you take us through this formation, what it looks like, who's in and who's out because of injuries or other reasons?
Yeah, so Steven Moreira at right back is coming back into the lineup. Caleb Porter said he and Lucas El Rayon are fit, so sounds like they'll start. Your center backs, you have your pick between Jonathan Mensah will be there for sure, but either Josh Williams or Miloš Deganek. Josh played last two games, I believe, right? He was starting because Miloš was out and had been on the bench this game. I don't think he was fully fit for 90 because of an injury. And then at left back, Pedro Santos has been playing great. The midfield three that I need to write about at some point, who I think has shown a lot of chemistry, and Aiden Morris, Darlington Nagby, and Artur, you could make the argument that this midfield has really been kind of the impact to get some results here. James Igbekeme can show he can be on the left or the right. I think he'll probably be on the right and Lucas El Rayon on the left coming in, or you could play Derek. Yeah. So that's one way, I guess that's a good way to break it down, is James on the right or Derek on the right, Lucas in on the left probably, and Miguel up top, or you could take Aiden out and have James in the midfield and Derek Etienne on the right and Lucas on the left, Miguel at the top.
You got seven players in six spots.
I think this is the first time in a while, as much as they like to talk about depth, that we see their players that are actually in form that they can bring off the bench.
And what, how does Zeller Ryan like the false nine, or however you might describe it in this formation?
I don't think it. I think Caleb Porter has alluded to it not suiting Lucas's strengths best, because he's basically not on the ball as much as he needs to be. So that's definitely an option they can do. They did that in the second half against New England. And I think when he came in against DC as well. But I can see him more so on a wing and floating into the middle.
It does save him. I mean, the workload isn't nearly as heavy, although...
Well, it's one thing if they have a lead, they can then bring another defensive player in. And
right. We're talking about all these guys. I tripped over something at MLSsoccer.com. They don't own the domain MLS.com. yeah. Well, multiple
listings. That's a real estate.
Yeah, multiple listing services. Yeah, it's a venerable institution and much older than even Greg Garber. So, or I should
Greg say, Garber.
Greg Garber's the guy I used to work with. So, yeah, I just conflated
podcast title.
One kind of dweeby, never mind. Don Garber, excuse me, the soccer Don, of course, was
Don Manfred,
the man I was referring to. But anyway, at the league's website, let's put it that way, It had a listing of teams, a breakdown of by age, and it goes by the full roster, so it's a little bit skewed as far as, you know, who's drawn in and who's playing fewer minutes.
Does that include
and so forth?
Does that include guys who have been signed partially by or from Crew 2 on loan? Or
I would refer you to MLSsoccer.com for any further details. But the takeaway from it. What for me was, you know, the youngest teams in the league are New York Red Bulls, Toronto FC, Montreal, Chicago, and Dallas. Those are the five youngest teams, ranging from 22.79 to 24.65. And the oldest teams in the league are, in order, Nashville, 28.1, the Columbus Crew, 27.89, the Revolution, 27.63. Mini at 27.3 and Colorado at 27.2. So the Crew is still under 28, which is Nashville's average age. I think it's the whole roster. And the Crew also starts among their top minutes guys are guys that are all 31 and over. When you talk about Room, Mensah, Santos, and Nagby, and I was just wondering, Kyle, first what. Does this mean anything in a grander scheme of things? For instance, is this, you always talk about roster builds, and we're seeing a classic case in a roster build, a rebuild with the Blue Jackets, for instance.
Well, isn't it a reload, a rebuild?
Well, whatever they want to call it. Yeah, but the point here is where is the Crew in this scheme of roster? Right. How does age factor in, and are they truly contenders with an average age of 27.89?
Well, I think the window's open now. I mean, it's, you know,
is their window.
Right. Yeah, this is their window. But
we had talked a lot about 2020, them being early, right? And I think they had even said that. Or Caleb Porter had said before 2020 season, specifically getting Darlington Nagby, then getting Lucas. That was the clear sign that, all right, they're in win now mode.
But I mean, they switched out Zardes for Barry. I mean, that's, you know, age wise, you know, but I think it's now. It's, you have to see what they do this summer if they truly are going to bring in, you know,
any team should be casually retooling. Right. I think,
but they are. I mean, they got, you know, Aiden's in there playing. He's a, what is he, 21, 20?
20, 20? I think, yeah.
Yeah.
So, and they got other guys that are young, but
ATN's 25, Barry's 24. I mean, that's what I mean. It can be a bit misleading or a tad skewed, but generally speaking, it is an interesting thing to bring up, I think.
Harrison awful out, and now you got a 27-year-old at right back.
But they were in win now mode, and they were losing now.
Well, the core
not too long ago here. Yeah,
I mean, they showed. Yeah. I think last year that, especially when maybe being an older team, you're more susceptible to injuries. Right. Guys with injury history too. Although Milton was younger, but he had a lot of injury history, and then they didn't have enough depth behind him. I think just older teams are more susceptible to things like that.
The old hammy.
not surprisingly, Jacob, the May 4th window, signing window, well, deadline at the end of the window closing. How many other phrases can I come up with this, Kyle?
We should be sponsored by Rosati at this point.
we should be sponsored by anyone at this point. And
come on, Podfather.
Yeah, it's not his fault. It's not his fault. not surprisingly, May 4th came and went, and they didn't sign anyone, which was expected. Where does all of this stand now? We covered some of this ground 2 weeks ago, Jacob, but it might behoove us to just go over it again now.
Yeah, I can't remember if on the last program we had said this or not, or this had happened after that, but Caleb Porter said they had made a run at a guy and essentially couldn't get him out of his club, meaning, and I had talked to Tim Bezpachenko about this in a Q&A that's on the website, just a lot of these teams right now, because MLS is in such a different schedule than the rest of the leagues, a lot of these teams are in playoffs right. or at the end of the season when they're trying to chase the top of the league. They're not going to let some of their right. players go. The summer, they're going to have more targets. So that's why they couldn't get a guy out of his club. It wasn't necessarily the offer, though maybe that had something to do with it. But now I think it's just they focus in on a couple guys to try to get them in quickly, but now they have a 2-month window to look at some more people who is probably on that list already. And, you know, the work continues. That's we had talked about Gustavo Del Prete, the right. Argentinian yeah. guy that had been rumored. I heard of some Norwegian guy as well that I'm working to get confirmed. So, the process is ongoing.
And is it's still laser focused on a striker?
Yeah, I think that's clear.
I mean, they gave there is a caveat that they said, you know, an attacker who might play wing as well. But about something at a forward position with the aim of generating more offense.
Yeah, that's right. I think they want a consistent goal scorer and have faith that Miguel Berry is going to develop a bit and they can bring him off the bench and hope he's in good form.
And as Jacob mentioned, there's plenty of good material, even by Kyle Robertson at dispatch.com. Please go check it out. And as he also mentioned, his Q&A with Tim Bezpachenko done recently had some interesting, well, you can read between the lines and many of the things that the president and general manager of the Columbus Crew.
Yeah, so we had set up after the loss at Detroit City, I had reached out to set up a Q&A.
Because we all had Caleb Porter being fired within 48 hours or something like that.
I don't think that's accurate.
No, that's not accurate. But anyway, that was part of the conversation.
Yeah,
as well.
And look, I think they know that question is coming too. So we had scheduled this then after the DC match in a couple weeks, and I just flat out said, I think this question's coming. If the past winless streak continued, or there's another here, just considering this year and all that, how safe is his job? And it was pretty much the same answer as we've always gotten, that they believe. I believe him, to be honest, too, is they believe Caleb can do the job and they believe he can. It was specifically mentioned that they want to host playoff games. They believe they could still get to that spot this year. One thing I found interesting is quoting directly from Bez here. It says he knows that we can't let a bad couple of weeks define a season. Letting two or three losses turn into five or six is something we do not want to happen. He talked about because it puts you so far behind the playoff line and you got to fight. So that to me was kind of saying
that was one of last year's lessons. Wasn't
yeah.
That?
Yeah. Yeah. And I think, in all honesty, Caleb probably knows that too, is you 5 to 6 losses after what happened last year. And you could even look to 2019 a bit as well, be it that group is so different. That just couldn't happen again. And then the question would probably be on the table as if they felt like he's the guy for the job, but seems pretty clear right now. They believe he's going, is a guy that can get them back to hosting playoff games and contending for MLS Cup. And one thing he said too, he said the locker room's together, and I asked, well, how do you assess that? He talked about, I thought it was valid. I wanted to know too. He talked about just all the different meetings that they'll have with players and staff and guys coming in, do like surveys, which I found interesting. But I think he's got at least some temperature of the room that says this team can still do what they need to do this year.
They do surveys?
He said every day when they come into the facility, they want to, you know, ask, you know, essentially, how are they doing? What's going on? And some other questions, but that's broadly it. I did ask about...
Do they check the standings? That's a survey.
I think we can always let them know where they are in this. Maybe that's what, we report on that, right? So they could check that out. One thing I did ask is...
So did he get a vote of confidence report from...
Would you call that a vote of confidence, I think, is the question.
I think it's just taking the same line he's always taken. They believe he can do the job. I did ask about his contract and said they didn't want to go into that. But, you know, he's in year four. A lot of these contracts are 4 or 5 years. Also, sometimes there are incentives if you finish a certain place or win something that can trigger something. So,
like an MLS Cup.
Right. I don't know that to be true, but yeah, that's broadly speaking that happens.
And he did win an MLS Cup. Yeah. I mean, we tend, or some people tend to put an asterisk on it, but... you know, the fact of the matter is, and if you can look at any sport, when there are truncated seasons, there are seasons that are halted and restarted for whatever reason, in any sport, most of the time, the team that comes out on top in the end is the best coached team. You know, you can look at the Washington football teams in the 80s or, you know, if you like Tommy Lasorda, his Dodgers, or, you look at the NBA coaches who've won in seasons that have been unsettled. So good on Porter. That's a good coaching job.
For now,
we haven't seen him yet. Take a team through a full and, considering how a couple of these teams have been touted, we haven't seen him, achieve to the bars they set just for themselves over the course of 34 games.
I also got the impression that I think, in evaluating all of the results they've had this year, that Bezpachenko and the front office staff put a lot of the onus on the players for not holding up to their own standards. Then you can get into, well, why is that happening? But when I had asked, like, holistically, how do you evaluate a coach's performance versus a player's performance, he kind of just talked about they don't do one in isolation. And you think, looking at the year, they played a lot of really good soccer, although it's not the most exciting when you're not getting the ball in the back of the net. The core and the foundation is there. So I think that was pretty much saying we had the opportunities there and guys just need to put them away.
It usually is the case, but there's a growing sense that the summer signing is a big one for this coach and for this administration.
Yeah, they got to get it right for sure.
So once again, we'll just mention that the grind ahead is at New York City FC on Saturday, a week later, home against LAFC, and then at Atlanta. And I forget whether the reference is that the birthplace or where the game was invented, Atlanta?
That or Seattle?
Yeah, one of them, it was born, the game was born there, and then the other place, it was invented there. Well, the fact that the Seattle Sounders have 8 Heritage Cups means they've won soccer heritage for North America, I presume.
Sure.
So they are heritage. And you know, I'm kind of leading into Seattle being the first MLS team to win the CONCACAF Champions League. The first leg, the 2 late goals to get it even and back to their place in front of 65,000 people.
That's some luck. MLS teams have just simply never gotten in this tournament, especially at some of these Mexican teams.
Right. They beat Pumas on aggregate.
Just torched them in that game at home. Yeah. I was really impressed. You know, Crew fans hate Seattle fans, right? Isn't that a thing?
Yep.
It was super impressive to see that crowd.
It's tough. It'd be like, you know, Austin winning a Heritage Cup or something like that. It's going to rankle here. But, you know, every organization, and we've heard it here ad nauseum everyone says we want to win every trophy we can. And like, you give them credit for, Campione's Cup, which was a, you know, ABC after school special of a trophy. CCL has some meat on it. And the Sounders are one team, one organization that actually has won every trophy. Yeah, I mean, like, mean, and it's not that old a team. Aside from the eight aforementioned Heritage Cups, so they not only do they own all the Heritage, but, you know, four U.S. Open Cups, two MLS Cups, two times runner-up, and one Supporters Shield. And that's competing for trophies. And that's I mean, in their brief span of time, it is remarkable. I hate to tip my cap to the Emerald City, but I have to say they are Heritage. Anything to add to that, gentlemen?
I'll just say it's really good.
I hope they play the Real Madrid or Liverpool in the first game. That's all I want to see is an MLS team to play the UEFA Champions League.
Wouldn't that be cool, though? I mean, let's go.
I love that. What was it? Tigres when they played Bayern Munich in the Club World Cup.
Club World Cup.
Wasn't it the final?
Yeah, it might have been. Yeah,
that was fun. Yeah. I want to see an MLS team do that.
Well, that's it. Anything else to add, gentlemen, before Patrick shuts up the lecture?
Does that get them in the Club World Cup now?
Yeah, they're in that.
Yeah. So that's going to be fun to see that draw. Do we know when that draw is, Jacob?
Somewhere in the...
It's like, well...
Because this year's so screwy with the
It's likely going to be played in 2023 at some point.
Yeah.
I would assume probably that summer after the...
Yeah, I'm just wondering about the draw again. It's a strange year with the November World Cup and the Seventh Ring of Hell, and at least temperature-wise, and that's why it's in the fall. But I digress some more, and I think that's all we have to say here.
Plug a couple things.
Oh, please do, Jacob.
There was a really cool story. I think some of you probably saw it on Twitter that Steven Moreira drove home this family that was outside Lourdes Arkham Field after a game. And like they couldn't get a cab or anything and just happened to stop this guy in the street. And it was Steven Moreira, and he drove 13, 14 miles back to their hotel. So I talked to him. He was still laughing about it like 2 days later. And I talked to the family. There's even like an anecdote in there. Steven, like he gave the kid a jersey. It was a family of three, and the kid was in town for a youth tournament. And the dad had his number from the night before and sent him a video of the kid making some saves. And Steven texted back something like, Macklin was his name. He said, Macklin Neuer. I thought that was pretty great. And then I wrote a story kind of profile on James Igbekeme, how he went from Nigeria to the third division in Portugal, ended up here. And he said he wants to stay here. Kind of an interesting nugget about like how he met his wife too. They didn't know anyone. Essentially just saw her profile on Facebook and thought, oh, that person's pretty. I'm going to message her. And now they're married and have a kid. So those are the little anecdotes I think are really cool. And then Kyle and I did a pretty cool event the other day at...
Yesterday.
Yeah, yesterday at Lourdes.com Field. The crew did this fundraiser, started back in October, trying to raise resources for children's mental health. And they did so by selling these scarves that went up to almost a mile in length when tied together, and it set a world record. So you can talk about it a little bit. I just thought it was cool.
No, I mean, I think mental health in youth sports is a huge thing. I think it's after the whole concussion kind of phase of being really important. I think this is the next phase. So if you're dealing with any sort of pressure or your kid is or anything, go to, I think it's On Your Sleeves.
Yeah. Nationwide Children's Hospital.
And they have a bunch of resources and really cool stuff. And, you know, I think it is super important. And I have two little ones that are kind of getting started, and, you know, that's something I'll be reading up and kind of checking in. And, you know, just parents put a lot of pressure on their kids, and, you know, you see stories. Was it the softball player earlier.
Two NCAA athletes. Yeah. Soccer. And then the soccer player at Stanford. Yeah, very sad. But important to speak up and, you know, let people know and ask, are you okay?
Yep.
So I think it's really cool whenever teams do stuff like that.
And, you know, keep it fun.
Yeah.
So all you adults in a position of impacting children,
myself included.
You too. Don't get thrown out of baseball games for arguing with umpires. That's no example to set, Jacob.
You're right. I did not. I only got threatened for not saying anything.
That's good. Set a good example for the West.
Well, should we pivot hard to Caleb Porter after the DC United game, apologizing for his comments about Jossie Zardes? I don't know if you had anything to say about that.
I was, you know what? Frankly, I've been out of town, and I'm not all that familiar with it. Why don't you take me through it?
So there was a quote he said before the DC United game, just explaining the club's rationale a little bit more about trading Jossie Zardes. And he said, "We just feel like right now is the time. He's not on the up. I'd say he's not falling off the cliff like some players do, but slowly he's going to start going down because of his age. And again, we just need a little bit more there." Talked about how they need a guy who can reliably get 15 to 20 goals in a season with the, you know, he has insinuated that Jossie's not the guy. And at the end of his contract, they didn't want to renew him. Some fans took that very harshly, and obviously Caleb Porter saw it. And he,
everyone can think that, but yep, saying it is about a guy with that much class,
yeah,
makes you appear to have much less class, is what I'll say about that.
Take the high road.
Yeah, especially with a guy like that. So the fans reacted, I imagine, similarly.
Yeah, they thought he was bashing him a bit, and you know, unprompted after the game, Caleb apologized, said he didn't like the way his his comments came out. And reflecting on that, he said, "I didn't like my choice of words. I reached out to him and apologized to him personally. By no means were some of the words I use and the phrases they use indicative of how I feel about a person and a player like him." So that's it.
Okay. It was like he always has to have the last say.
Yes. And with that last say, we'll sign out here for Jacob Myers. And go to dispatch.com if you would. Lots of great stuff in there. And for Kyle Robertson, one of the finest photographers in the world, is what it said. And Patrick Flaherty at the controls here in our studio. Patrick, kick us out of here.
Just going to run this dog to see if we can find any type of human remains that are left.
Listen to Where Secrets Go to Die, The Disappearance of Derek Hennigan. From the Detroit Free Press, a new podcast set in the woods of Michigan's Upper Peninsula. Available on Apple, Spotify, Freep.com, or wherever you get your podcasts.